Hi, and welcome to Fairy Tale Flip. I am Donna Fields, and this is
Vanessa Y. Rogers from Fabric of Folklore podcast.
Wonderful. And we decided to team up. I have a podcast as well called Doorways to Learning. It's about education. And Vanessa, I was actually honored to be on her podcast a while ago. She's crazy about fairy tales. I am crazy about fairy tales. So we wanted to share our thinking about them and talk and see what you think about our opinions and our comments about fairy tales, because I think they're really important. And Vanessa, what do you think about fairy tales?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that there's so much more to fairy tales than people assume on the surface level. I think there's a lot of hidden meaning that people don't garner, especially because they were written so long ago. A lot of times those cultural nuances are kind of lost to modern times. But when we dive into them and learn more about them, I think there's so much more depth and history in them.
I completely agree with you. And there's one other important point for me is because they're so prevalent in society and all societies, we need to be really careful about how much we are imbibing about the messages in the fairy tales and mostly the archetypes. So what I like to do is break down the story so that we can enjoy it. I always thought that when I started studying it, I would stop enjoying them. I like them more than I used to. But especially if we have children, I think it's really important to get them to be a little more conscious about what they're reading and the extremes in fairy tales. So what do you think about that, Vanessa? What do you think about what we're going to do today?
I'm really excited, and I'm excited about the story that you chose, The Singing Bone. It was a really interesting story, and I had a lot of questions for you.
Excellent. I have questions for you too, so let's get into it. A quick summary, we are going to put in the show notes a link. Vanessa is going to be reading it to her children, and that's going to be so exciting because she has her own sort of sing-songy way about reading stories. There is also another video that someone has uploaded on YouTube, and we'll make that available too. But just as a quick summary, The Singing Bone, it's about a boar that was ravaging a whole kingdom, and the king decided that enough of his people had been killed by it, so he wanted to find someone to kill the boar and bring peace to the land. Two boys decided to go in the forest and kill the boar. The young son killed the boar. The older son took credit for it, killed his brother, married the king's daughter, and the singing bone, the is from the younger brother's actual skeleton, and the bone spoke after the poor boy had died, and that's the singing bone. He told the story of the fact that his older brother killed him.
Yeah, a true vengeance story, in a way.
The younger brother was avenged. The younger brother was avenged, finally, yes. So, should we get into it and decide what we think has value and what we think maybe needs to be looked at more carefully?
Yeah, my first response in just starting the story was how little the princess has to say in any of her life. The king in the start of the story offers the hand of his daughter, the princess, to anyone who will kill this boar. And she's not even named, although I guess no one is named in the story as well. But I know that for lots and lots of history, women have had zero agency in their life. And it was just, a glaring example of that in this story.
Yeah, I love that because it's in the first line. And so often in fairy tales, whether we realize it or not, the queen is usually not named. The queen is usually either dead before the story begins or dies from the first lines. And as you say, the princess is just an object. She's objectified. And I think that's really important for especially girls to recognize and boys too, because boys need to learn that a lot of the things they're learning are not appropriate. And so it's just as important for them to realize that in fairy tales, girls often don't have agency. And for girls to realize they have the right to not be sold by their father just because a prince comes along and kills a dragon.
Right, exactly.
All right, so what's the next thing that really caught your eye?
So I have noticed a pattern in fairy tales that generally there's three brothers in a lot of stories, and the third brother is always the kind brother that gets taken advantage of by his older brothers, but he generally is the one who perseveres. I was surprised that this one only had two brothers, and I was curious if other versions has three.
Really great question. So let's talk about versions. So the thing about versions is that they're, depending on what, let's say, century the story was written, it fills a need for society. It tells something about society. It says something about the people who are either making money or not making money and how wealth and power are distributed. So fairy tales have a lot of that undercurrent of societal norms and societal values. Mm-hmm. And that's also very important to recognize. So when we're talking about versions, in this case, the story that you're going to read to your kids and the story that's on the YouTube is by the Grimm's brothers. And often the Grimm's brothers' tales are very gruesome, very, very, very specific. And in this case, we don't have a lot of blood and gore. We do have a boar that's killed, but that's about it. The original version apparently is back in the Greek myths. And that's really important because a boar in the Greek myths has a lot of significance. And in this case, yeah, a boar symbolizes divine retribution and the challenges we have to face. So I love that you brought up the version, and the boar is very significant. So I'd like to talk about that a little more, but what do you get out of the fact that it comes from Greek myths originally?
That is really interesting. So has the story changed quite a bit from the Greek mythology?
It's changed a lot because in the Greek mythology, it was most of the heroes and it was most of the gods that went after the boar. The whole thing started when one king forgot or he decided not to honor one of the gods, Artemis, and Artemis took revenge. And so revenge really is a part of the thread that goes through both versions. Mm-hmm. And Artemis sent down a boar. I mean, it was a fantastically evil and effective boar that was killing everything. And all the gods and the heroes, and I'm saying heroes, not heroines, went after the boar. And it was Atalanta, a woman who actually killed the boar. And that went against all of society, even in Greek times.
Mm-hmm.
So it's really, you were talking about three, and the versions, in this case, it surprised me too, there were only two sons, and there mm-hmm. was only one daughter. So that is unusual in fairy tales, but they're used the same way.
Do you remember the Atalanta, is she a goddess?
Atalanta, she is, I can't remember if she's a goddess, but she was, I think she's the goddess of the hunt.
Okay.
I have to look that up.
Oh, that would definitely make sense.
It would make sense, yeah.
Was boar hunting a big thing in Greek society?
Boar hunting was a big thing. It comes up a lot in Greek mythology, but this was very specific. Artemis sent the boar down to ravage the whole town because he was just really upset that King didn't honor him. But yeah, you've read a lot of fairy tales, and usually it's the boar that kills someone, unfortunately, in a hunt.
Mm-hmm. I'm curious because, you know, it was in Greek society, and then it's also in Germany. I wonder if, you know, boars caused a lot of grief in general society, if this was something that was commonly a common problem that had to be dealt with.
Yeah. I mean, listen, I'm in Spain, and this is 2023, and we have boars here. Yeah, they're called jabalí.
Oh, and are they big?
Here, where I live, they're not so big, but they can do a lot of harm because they have a big horn, and mm-hmm. that's what they use to defend themselves. And if you are impaled on that horn, it's for other animals, dogs, for instance, that's it. For mm-hmm. humans, in the stories, they didn't have penicillin in a lot of these stories, so yes, they mm-hmm. died. And boars mm-hmm. were a big problem because they hide in the bushes. And what they do is they're not looking to kill you. They just want to defend themselves, but they will come out of nowhere. I've been near a boar and had no idea it was there until it started moving around and I got out of there.
Yeah, that's smart.
Yeah.
They are not to be trifled with.
No. So yeah, it's a great question. And in this case, so they gave it this whole symbolism, and it really is about if you are faced with a boar, you might have done something to get some gods angry with you, because it's about divine divine retribution.
And so if you are to kill a boar, for instance, what does that say about the hunter?
Oh, that's really interesting. Listen, Vanessa, you probably know this. I'm a vegan, so I'm not crazy about anyone killing anything. If the boar kills the hunter, you're saying, or if the hunter kills the boar?
No, what does it say about the hunter? Does it say that he is divine if he is the hunter of a boar? Because the boar itself is a symbol of divine retribution.
Right.
But if the hunter is successful in his hunt of the boar, does that symbolism then reflect upon the hunter?
That's a really great question. I would say, and this is not something I've read, I would say that the hunter killing the boar in later versions, we're talking about the Greek version, and then we have the Grimm's version, and later on, one of the boar turns into a dragon, and the hunter or the knight kills the dragon. So what do we say about a knight killing the dragon? We think he's a hero because he saved the city, he saved the kingdom, he saved the pueblo. I think that's something we need to really look at. Do we want to bring up our children thinking that killing something, doing without it, making it disappear, makes us noble?
Mm-hmm.
I would say no. When I put it that way, what do you think?
I'm thinking in terms of a dragon. And I'm thinking, you know, in all those stories where a dragon is, you know, destroying people's lands, what other options are there if you can't communicate with the dragon? It requires a lot of out-of-the-box thinking rather than just to murder the creature. I understand your thought process, but I what are the other options that they might consider in this fantastical world of dragons?
Yeah, I love that. And that's exactly what we need to ask ourselves. I don't have the answer. And even if I did, I don't need to answer it. The whole question here is, aren't there other options than just killing something? Mm-hmm. Are there other options than making something disappear? We would all love to make problems disappear. Mm-hmm. The monster, the dragon, the boar is a problem.
Mm-hmm.
But by killing it, we haven't grown ourselves. If we can find another way to deal with that challenge, with that distraction, with that, you know, something that's really uncomfortable, then I think that we are more noble because we are trying to find a connection.
Yeah.
And remember, a dragon is simply a symbol. The boar is a symbol. What it is something you don't want around. But can't we address this in another way than just eliminating it, killing it?
Mm-hmm. And that's interesting that you brought that up, because when I was rereading the story last night, and the first thought that came to my mind was, how big are boars? Because I don't think I've ever seen one in real life. I've seen them on television shows, and I don't really know. I don't have like a true comparison of their size. It said they can be up to 300 pounds. I have no idea if that's what the size that they are in Germany or in Greece. But I came across this NPR story that was in 2020 of this boar in a wooded area where there was a nude beach, and there was this viral video that went all over the world because this man was bathing nude and his laptop got stolen by a local boar, and he ran into the forest naked after this boar who was trying to just, like, I don't know what the boar was trying to do with his laptop. Anyways, but this boar has become famous, and they weren't sure what to do because the boar had and her children had become dependent upon humans for their food, and so they had become dependent on all of the tourists that were in the area, and they were concerned that once the tourist season ended, that they would not be able to forage for their own food because they hadn't learned those skills. And so their biggest concern was that they were going to start going into townships and cause havoc. And so there was this huge debate about whether or not the boar should be killed or not. I don't know that there was a conclusion. There must have been one, that it didn't say in the story, but that we're still dealing with that same question in today's time. How do we handle these situations? Do we just murder, or are there other ways to work around these issues?
Yeah, and I'm going to say something that might rile other people up. With all the money we spend on weapons, we need to be spending that money on finding other solutions, more pacifistic solutions. You know, that's what wars are about. And if we can get back to the story, this is exactly what the fairy tales do. The king decides that he wants the boar gone because it's killing people, and he probably had pressure. I'm not sure that he really cared at all, because the boar is not going to get into the castle. But he, instead of doing it himself, he looks for someone else to do it, and he finds the poor man's sons. Mm-hmm. So the fairy tale also is doing is depreciating the value of people who don't have money. We're mm-hmm. saying, I have a lot of money and I have power. I'm not going to put myself in danger, so I'll put you in danger. And this is the same thing presidents and dictators do. They have their soldiers go in for them. You know, I seriously question that. So. Mm-hmm. But that's what we learn from fairy tales. Fairy tales are very extreme. We have archetypes, and we have good people and bad people, and there's nothing in between. And although that's really nice and easy about reading a fairy story, that's why we like them. It's not mm-hmm. reality. And it's, again, mm-hmm. something we need to consider.
Mm-hmm. Now, what about the brothers? Why do you think that this is a common archetype for the brother, the elder brother, to be the unkind one, and the younger brother to be the smarter and the more generous, kind-hearted?
I think it's simply about extremes, and there are a lot of extremes in the story. We have, like you said, the elder brother is the evil one, and the younger one is the innocent one. In this case, he's not so intelligent, but he's innocent and pure heart, it says. Mm-hmm. And there are a lot of extremes here. You have the king said, go in separately in the forest. So it's creating this dichotomy in a societal way that we're supposed to think, the good one is over here and the bad one is over here. But they go in on the east and the west. And this is also something that goes into our minds, whether we realize it or not. The west is where, usually in Greek mythology at least, that's where people go to, you know, off to the Hades, you know, death. And the east is when the sun comes up, and this is where Christian methodology or mm-hmm. mythology, excuse me, Christian mythology comes in. And this is where Christ was supposed to have come when the sun comes up. And again, we have all these extremes here. When you're reading it, are you aware of that? As much as you study fairy tales, are you aware of a lot of these dichotomies?
Sometimes, but not always. Some, you know, a lot of times the first reading through is, you know, just grasping at what the story is about. And then the second read through, there might be some of those elements. But was there a sunset and a sunrise in this story particularly?
No, but I did look up the symbolism of east and west because it did call my attention to it. Mm-hmm. And it's symbolism, not so much mm-hmm. there was a sunrise and sunset, although mm-hmm. the younger brother kills the boar. He comes in the east, which is about purification and light. He kills the boar and then goes west for some reason. And the west, and on the west is where his elder brother is. Mm. And the west symbolizing death. Indeed, that's where the younger brother dies.
Mm-hmm.
And so there really is a lot of information in these seemingly innocent use of words, east and west. Mm-hmm. It's very powerful, actually.
I was quite surprised at the older brother murdering the younger brother. And I a lot of times in these stories with multiple brothers, you know, they foil the younger brother, they, you know, steal from them, but generally they don't murder. So I was a little bit taken aback that he would go to that extreme. Do you feel like you see that more, or is this a rarer occasion?
Yeah, I would think it's less rare in modern versions. And I, you know, that I looked for different stories for us to talk about in this first podcast. Uh-huh. And I was disturbed that the brother killed his younger brother. I see, and it isn't usual. They're usually not very hospitable, and they're usually pretty hateful to each other, but kill, no. And mm-hmm. I think this story is a lot about extremes. And it's not about negotiation, and it's not shades. It's about extremes. And as much as I like the story, I love breaking it down so that people realize that we don't need to live like that. It's a fairy tale, and we need to use it as an example of what not to do. How do you feel about that?
Yeah, I mean, my question to you is going to be, do you feel like the people of the time who, you know, Grimm's brothers were the ones who were collecting all these stories from all of these places, I wonder what their sense was. Did they see those extremes when they were, you know, telling these stories? Do you feel like it might have been a story of I'm curious what they got out of it.
Yeah, I think that's a really important question. And I would love to, I really need to reread the times when the Grimm brothers were collecting these stories. But it was a dark time, and people didn't have as many recourses as we have now. And there were a lot of absolutes. You didn't have the medicine we did now. And so if you got sick, you probably died. If you didn't have money, you didn't have a lot of recourses, and unless you were very clever, you were either thrown into, you know, the abyss or you died. There were a lot of extremes. And as I'm saying, if you read through all the Grimm's brothers collections of fairy tales, they are not very fun.
Mm-mm.
It's upsetting.
No, very depressing.
They're gruesome. They're gruesome. And there was a lot more of that behavior then. I can't say we're much better humans now, but I think that maybe there is a recognition of more shades of what we can do.
Mm-hmm.
And people without a lot of money can still survive somehow.
Mm-hmm.
But at that time, they weren't able to.
A lot of the stories in the Grimm fairy tale books have happy endings with someone getting a pot full of gold and no longer having to suffer in poverty. But this one, I mean, the younger brother is avenged, but no one is alive except for the princess, who is not named and no one cares about.
That's right. And now has no other possibilities because she has already been married and she can't get married again.
Yeah,
and right, because the older brother is killed. He's thrown into the water in a sack and killed too. But the younger brother is avenged, but as we said, he's still dead. But his bones sing, and I love the idea of the singing bone. And the bone is about, you know, that's the core of ourselves. And it sings. And I think it's really important to look in the symbolism of singing. Mm-hmm. And in ancient cultures, it was really the vibration of singing was a healing from physical, emotional, and mental and spiritual levels. And so we have a story that has an underlying spirituality, even though the rest of it is pretty upsetting. In the end, we have some sort of spiritual calming. I don't know. Did you get that at all?
No, I didn't pick up on that at all. But maybe I didn't see the singing as spiritual. I was just kind of caught up on a bone that sings. And did it become a horn?
Yeah, he put it on the horn.
Oh, he put it on the horn, and right. Then it sang.
Yes. Yeah. And another interesting thing, Vanessa, we need to say, since we're getting into the societal implications of it, the shepherd found the singing bone, you know, poor shepherd with the sheep. He finds the bone, finds that it was speaking, and said, oh, I need to show this to the king. And so the immediate thinking is, I need to show to someone who has money and power. I need to validate this. It can only be validated through giving it to someone of money and power. And again, it's very important to realize that that is a message we're getting. And we can either accept it without thinking about it or recognize it.
Mm-hmm. And I do think that it, you know, singing bone is a much more fun way of saying that bones talk. Right, how the bones are laid out and where their location is, and you know all the things that a detective might get from a crime scene, you know, it's kind of symbolic of how, you know, obviously bones don't generally sing in real life, but it might seeing to someone who is skilled at seeing how a dead body is laid out. So I think that also is an interesting way of exploring the singing bones.
Yeah, I love that. So what you're saying is that it might not literally sing, but if someone understands, you know,
yes,
understands bones laid out in a ground, they're going to be able to put together a whole theory of what happened.
Right. But it's much more fun to say the bones are singing.
Yeah, kind of like both ways, realism and fairy tales.
Yeah. Because surely back in the day, people were, you know, closer attuned to, you know, seeing death and seeing which death is intentional and what is not. I don't know if being pushed over a bridge would automatically be seen as intentional, but, you know, probably it didn't happen very frequently without a pusher.
Right, but the brother clubbed him over the head and he fell over. Yeah.
And then he fell over.
Right. He was very intentional. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, and I thought that was very important. He was going over a bridge, which is, you know, from one reality to another. He was literally bridging realities. And before he could get to the other reality, which would have meant he would show the boar to the king and marry the daughter, he was clubbed in the head and said, no, you're not going any further.
Mm-hmm.
So. That was powerful. And I'd like to go back to the fact that the daughter had absolutely no choice.
Mm-hmm.
Really wrong. Yeah.
Yeah, I really wanted to know what happened to the princess. But she wasn't thought about.
No, again, she was objectified and nobody really worries about her. So it's something boys and girls need to think about.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay, I'm going to ask you one question. I was going to give you a whole variety of stories and I finally said, Vanessa, I saw this one and I keep coming back to it no matter how many other stories I read. And you said, oh, that's wonderful. Why did you decide that you wanted to start with this one?
Well, I found it interesting. I liked that it only had two brothers rather than three. I like the idea of inanimate objects singing and telling stories because I think that there is a lot of storytelling in things that don't necessarily look like they might tell a story, but like I said before, you know, a detective can get a story from just looking at a crime scene because they are skilled at looking at those things. And then I also was really struck at the princess, and I think that is sad, but it is in almost every single story that we come across, especially in the Grimm fairy tales.
Yes.
I think maybe fairy tales in other places might have a little bit more agency, but in general, women in most places in the world, you know, were controlled by men. There are a few exceptions that we might look at in other episodes. Maybe we can find some non-European fairy tales that look at females in society and how they were treated, if any better. But and a lot of our history, that is where the role of women is. And you were talking about war earlier and how we always rushed into war, and that's primarily because men have been in charge. I think that when a group of women are in a room, it's one of the last
resort
steps. Yeah, resort.
I think it's really important you said, and I love the idea, we're going to choose something from another culture. There are going to be different versions, but let's choose something from another culture next time. And I'd love people to be aware of the versions they're watching now, because we haven't talked about Walt Disney at all, but in the Walt Disney versions, there's a lot of visuals of the princess, but the dialogue, the women talk, and I've read studies on this, they talk 10% of the time that the prince and the other males in the movies talk.
Mm.
Not in the newer version, not in the newer movies,
mm-hmm.
but in the older versions, yes, we need to look at that.
Yeah, there's definitely been a shift in how people watch shows and movies, and they're more aware of it, especially after, what is that test, the Betch, what is it called, where you can watch a movie or a TV show and it has to pass whether women have a conversation about anything except for a man. What is that test called? There's like three little steps. You're not familiar with it?
No, I'm not. I wish I were. Can you look it up and we'll talk about it next time?
Yes, we'll do that. I'll look it up because it's a really interesting way of looking at film and movies. And now people make a stronger effort to make sure that women have a conversation that does not revolve around a man.
Interesting. We've got to do that. We've got to do that. So then I have something. And is there anything else about the story that you would like to talk about? Because what I'd love is to end by asking our listeners a question. And that question, go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, I think it's interesting that, you know, I think that in Greek society, I don't know Greek society super well, but I in high school, I did do a paper on women in Greek society, and they seem to have more agency, at least from the little research that I did 20 plus years ago. But I liked in the story that there was more women, at least the woman who was the huntress ended up being the hero. And I think it's interesting that it changed entirely to the European viewpoint. And I think that that definitely says something about the different cultures that they were in.
Yeah, completely agree. The Greek goddesses are very, very well known and very powerful. Although Zeus is the ultimate king. So. Yeah.
And a well-known womanizer.
And a well-known woman. Very well said. Very well said.
Well, all right. What's your question for the audience?
I would love the listeners to read the story, either the version you're going to read or the one we have on YouTube, or we can actually put in the show notes the link to, I'll upload the story itself, the Grimm's version, and let us know if there's something that they're wondering about in the story that we haven't talked about, because there really are, it's a very short story, and yet there's so much in it, and I'd just love for them to propose theories about it and ask us questions. How does that sound?
Yeah, absolutely. I'd love to hear feedback from other people, what they got out of it.
Okay, this has been so much fun, Vanessa. So much fun.
I agree. Absolutely. I love dissecting all these fairy tales.
So we'll do it more. We'll pick another story, and next month we'll do another fairy tale flip. Thank you so much, Vanessa. This is so much fun with talking it out with you.
Thank you. Have a great month. Week.
Thank you.
Stay.